Welcome to Tabletop Dropouts. I'm George.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Mike.
Guys, how are you guys today?
Well, all things considered, aside from my ongoing analysis paralysis with trying to build my ad mech, I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Mike, how about you?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to decipher the general's handbook that we just got.
So yeah,
I'm trying to figure out kind of how my death army is going to change. It looks like trying to figure all this stuff out.
They actually replaced all of your weapons on your battle scrolls with kittens.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Fantastic. And they increased it by 30 points. Thanks, Games Workshop.
That reminds me of a joke about how cats are actually God's perfect killing machines, but they're so angry because we just keep petting them and giving them scritches because they're a little too small. Yeah, but that's a great transition. Obviously, you know, new stuff and news. The General's Handbook for 2020 came out the day before this recording. So Saturday, what is it? July 11th, I guess? Who knows? I don't know what day it is anymore because of quarantine.
Yeah, time may be entirely a human construct, but you are correct that it was the 11th.
I think it's March 74th. Yeah, so anyhow, I haven't had a chance really to go through it, guys, but initial impressions from you?
So just off the cuff, without having had a chance to really dive in deeply and get into all the minutiae, aside from the random inclusion of a flying game, which I'm not going to complain about, it's just this doesn't fall under this category. This has everything that I've been saying for the past year I felt Age of Sigmar has been missing. Character creation rules, a map campaign, better multiplayer rules. This General's Handbook, by removing the points out of it and removing all those lingering alliance rules or allegiance rules, like the Grand Alliances and like Lizardmen, Seraphon. I'm drawing a blank. I'm like thinking old fantasy battles. By removing all those, they made enough room to actually put interesting things in here that aren't just a retread of did we print the same rules or did we update it and change it so that one summoning mechanic's different.
Definitely. You know, I think one of the big things, and you just touched on this, George, that I'm excited for is the character creation. You know, looking at it right now, it looks like pages 64 and 65 are kind of the crunch on that. But on 66 and 67, we have some really amazing, looks like mostly converted models. Like, especially on page 67, there's this vampire lord for a Legion of Blood
that is badly.
It looks like a zombie dragon and the Archaon the Chosen model combined. And I mean,
I think it's more.
I'm going to go spend like $200 to do this, and I'm not going to execute it anywhere nearly as well. But I mean, it's pretty awesome, and I bring that up because, to me at least, you know, having had not yet again played a game of Age of Sigmar yet, still working on it, AOS definitely seems like it's a little bit more fluff than it is crunch, as opposed to the crunch over fluff of 40K. And I'm definitely, you know, excited for that, for a little bit of a pivot to a little bit more fluffy and narrative-driven play. So that's kind of what's gotten me excited about it, you know, just first impression at least.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm super into it. I love the match play battles, but I'm really loving the map campaign and the coalition matrix where the Skaven are only fracturously co-aligned with other Skaven, which is just so great.
Yeah, Skaven just hate each other, and that's part of the charm.
They just hate everyone, though.
Yes,
isn't that their thing?
Yeah. They just hate each other in particular. They are like, unless you're the same clan, and even if you're in the same clan, sometimes you're just gonna backstab other Skaven as quickly
really
as possible.
Capricious, I think. Yeah. So you know what, though, I will say that some of the Skaven players that I've come into contact with have been some of the most dedicated to their faction. I know a guy named John, doesn't live here in Northeast Florida anymore, but he plays Skaven, and I remember him posting in our Facebook group about how, you know, he wanted to, like, eat man things and stuff like that.
Wait, is this John that plays Clan Pestilence?
Skaven? Yeah, I think so.
I didn't know he moved. I played with him a few times. Yeah, yeah. John's a really good guy,
John's
100% dedicated
very
to Skaven.
Very into it, and I very much appreciate that. You know, usually orc players are the ones that kind of get that, and I think rightfully so. You know, I have heard people shout WOG at an RTT before, which is always fantastic. So yeah, but I really appreciate anyone that's that dedicated to their faction. And Yeah, so I'm happy that the rules reflect that, and it's not like they're aligning with Stormcast or anything, because that'd be weird.
So speaking about the Skaven real quick, while before we also leave, or not leave, but stop touching on the heroes as much, y'all may be drooling over that big fancy converted Archeon. Mm. I'm just trying to figure out what's the most ridiculous mount I could put a Skaven hero in for my client Scryer army.
I don't think it's an Archeon. I think it's a Hive Tyrant.
Could be.
I think it's a Tyranid Hive Tyrant with a zombie dragon head. And then the base is the...
you're pivoting back to...
Yeah, I'm fixated on that page. Like, I want that model.
Slight digression.
GW, make that model, please. I will buy it.
You know, that's one thing I've noticed. And we can kind of pivot over to some of the 40K news with this, because this is a 40K thing. But when they dropped the Fabius Bile, Creations Bile in War of the Spider and the new Fabius model, they definitely... showed one of the models in that is a sorcerer that's been converted using some Necron bits. I mean, not Necron, sorry, Eldar bits, Eldari. And it was a super awesome looking model. And man, I'm really excited that GW is also showing conversions and stuff now, because I feel like they went away from that in 7th edition and most of 8th. Whereas, you know, when I was a kid, I remember them always like featuring stuff like that in White Dwarf. And, you know, I'd really like to see that come back.
Well, it sort of goes back into the old practice they had where they used to, in White Dwarf, they used to actually give you articles on how to source build terrain.
Yeah.
And once they got into the business of selling plastic kits of terrain, that no longer made sense to them, which I get. But I feel like now by giving us rules to make our own conversions, our own custom heroes, and then by extension with 9th edition, the Crusade system, where we're going to be able to build up and put some more personality, we're probably going to see a more welcoming approach to some unorthodox conversions.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, you bring up terrain, and we're already kind of talking about 40K. So one of the big news items, I think, for this week is the another new Primaris thing. Yay, awesome. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head.
Hammerfall turret?
Hammerfall bunker.
Bunker. And so it's basically a bunker that is also a drop pod. So you can deep strike it in turn one. Guys, I'm trying not to be too salty about it, but I am getting a little bit of salt on this front, simply because as a tournament player, I feel like there's going to be a lot of people that are going to realize, hey, I can deep strike three of these things into the center of the table turn one, because, again, they're Space Marines as drop pods. They have that. And they also automatically shoot at everything in range. So you can get three of these things shooting at the entire enemy army before it even moves. Now, like we've said with all the other 9th edition leaks, we do have the full rulebook now. It's been out there. But maybe we're not getting all the facts on this. So maybe there will be some limits to that, hopefully. But I don't know.
I touched upon this earlier whenever we were talking pre-show, but I think a big thing that this is going to push people to realize is that you can't just have the big, flat, open war setup on your table. You need terrain. And these units are going to make it so that people are going to have to be more judicious with their application of terrain.
Sure.
Yeah, but the thing is like, why is the burden on the player to compensate for... I mean, I'm just thinking about the horror of an Iron Hands or Imperial Fist faction Hammerfall, because if it's an Iron Hands list, I'm pretty sure that it gets that vehicle keyword, which means you need to double wound it to bracket it. That's the first thing. And if it's a bracket thing, it's going to take even longer to kill while still being incredibly effective, or it's going to have exploding sixes and you put a captain in that aura
as an Imperial Fist. I'm assuming that they're going to get chapter traits and doctrines on these.
Without seeing the keywords and the actual stat line on it, like the full thing, it's hard to comment on that aspect of it. Because if it gets the full chapter benefits, it's going to be a beast. But what I was talking about is that there's a certain mindset for some players, especially certain armies, that they want less terrain because it benefits them to not have terrain. Mm-hmm. Right? If a Tau gun line shows up, they want to see as little terrain on the table as possible because it's to their advantage not to. Now, we do know that the 40K, the 9th edition rulebook does have guidelines on suggestions for terrain. What is it? I think it's one terrain feature per square foot or something like that, which I feel like that stuff is in there to encourage a more terrain dense board to make it so that you that big gun box that just drops from the sky, which I just want to take a moment to say that is the most StarCraft referencing thing. God. It's called, we're going full circle. The dragon has eaten its own tail.
Ouroboros.
Ouroboros.
Took the word out of my mouth. Yeah.
But there has to be, for these types of units to exist in a healthy gameplay environment, people's perceptions are preconceived notions about what terrain needs to be on the board and how much terrain needs to be on the board is probably going to have to shift.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'm just looking at it more from a competitive point of view because, you know, in ITC, specifically the Pro Tabletop Tournament in Atlanta, which probably isn't happening this year because everything that was going on, started last year, and in that they had standardized terrain. It was two of the L's in the middle, and then basically just very standard boxes outside of that. Which was there to reduce variance.
Yeah,
and that was pretty much every table had that from what I understand.
They'll probably still have standardized terrain, but after one tournament where these boxes are on, these bunkers are dropping, they'll probably change what that layout looks like because they'll realize that that terrain isn't fair for every army.
Yeah, and I think that that will be on the
it'll be on
third
the
party tournament, the TOs, to do that because GW seems to not be quite as agile in making changes. I mean, you look at the Iron Hands, like specifically the Broviathan list that Richard Siegler won, LVO and a bunch of other, well, actually I think he only took that to LVO, but that a bunch of dudes won tournaments with last year. It was about 6 months until GW actually addressed some glaring issues in the Iron Hands
companies. And that brings up an interesting point when it comes to competitive play. It's the third party companies, right?
GW
very rarely does true organized play, and that'd be maybe something that we could hope to see from them in the future. Like, here's a tournament kit that's beyond just what the stores do, because the stores do it from much more narrative, let's have fun in the store, but actually getting out there and doing a high level competition organizational kit is not something I frankly can think I've ever seen from GW.
Yeah, and I think they're trying to lean back into that. I think they want to do a Warhammer Grand tournament at some point. Obviously, that's all in flux. Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like that's probably enough saltiness for me. I do want to keep talking about terrain, though. I know we kind of briefly mentioned this, obviously, off air. But do you guys think that we're going to see new terrain products for each faction within 40K? And so, I think Sigmar pretty much already has that.
Sigmar has it for most of the armies.
They don't for Nagash.
Yeah, not every army does. Okay. Nagash doesn't. Stormcast actually don't.
I thought they had the Storm Vault or something.
No, the Storm Vault's just terrain.
That's right.
Okay. It's just
so
a terrain
it's just
piece.
Like the penumbral
engine. Yeah, the penumbral engine is a, like, the Storm Vault is just a terrain kit with no rules. It's like basically big hills and or big ziggurat style altars and stuff like that. But I could easily see, especially with the stuff like the bunker and that new fortification. Is that a new actual new detachment?
Yeah. I believe so. I believe that it's a fortification detachment.
And they already, a bunch of factions already have it. You know, Genestealer Cults have the drill. Tau have the Tidewall stuff.
Chaos has the Noctilith crown.
Yep.
They do have the crown.
Cool, but useless.
The orcs have the
cool model, though.
No, it's awesome model. I always think about buying one, but I just, I don't know. I don't see the use.
There's the number of armies. We're getting to the point where it's closing parity where about almost half the armies seem to have them. You know, orcs have them. Eldar don't have them yet. Marines are getting one. We know that for sure. Necrons, I don't think have them.
Oh, I'm sure they're getting
I think Necrons
one.
Are going to get something. I know that they... Well, no, they are getting something. I just can't... Because they teased it at the same time as the Hammerfall. But it does not
Oh, no, it's
anything.
Those pylons. It's those weird pylons that you get like three
like
of them.
It's like moving terrain. They're like massive shield drones. But, you know, it teased their rules. And, I mean, it's completely overshadowed by the possibility of what the Hammerfall could do.
So, I think that what they may do is they may just say that you can only take one of this model per... Like, they may limit it as a terrain feature. Like, you can put one of these down. Because I can't take Skull Altars in Sigmar and just drop them wherever I please.
Well, but in a fortification network, you can take zero to three.
That's right. Up to three.
Yeah. And you know what? That brings something up in my mind. There are just... There's probably like 10 or 15 different fortifications within 40K already that any army can take. From my understanding, there's nothing stopping an Orcs player from taking an Aegis defense line. You can take it. I don't believe it has keywords.
No.
Now, I could be totally wrong because I've seen fortifications used twice in 8th edition. It's never worked out well for the player that was using them.
That's not true. There was that one guy that did the all assassin fortification network list at a tournament, and he did pretty well.
Literally, I have seen.
With your own two eyes, yeah.
I would be lying if I said how viable that would be, since I personally have not seen fortifications at all in a game yet.
Mm-hmm.
I just, knowing how they like to make sure everybody seems to have a little bit of something similar, and how, so like for Xenos, basically they would just need to give it to what? Eldari
already have the Webway Gate.
Okay, so they already have one.
Yeah.
So then really they just need to give it to, because Tau already has it. Tyranids themselves, I don't think, have one, unless they could use the drill like the Gene Stealer cults can.
Tyranids are kind of, they wouldn't make sense to really have one anyway.
They have big little spore things that drop pods. They're very annoying. I can't remember what they're called.
But either way, it's not far of a stretch for them to give them to the rest of the factions that don't have them.
It's just, you know, the logistics and the business, I would assume, that is involved behind developing an entirely new fortification or building for each faction. I'm sure that's probably not what they're focused on, but it would be cool.
It's a perfect little splash release with a codex. Hey, here's your 9th edition codex. Not getting any real new models, but here's a fortification.
Well, the thing is like, just make... You have Chaos, and they're basically just target practice for Space Marines now. Every unit that we're replacing, and you know, you see it all day, and everybody's saying it, and it's exactly what Games Workshop's doing, and I think you're crazy if you don't believe it, is they're phasing out all of their one-wound veteran models.
Dude,
they're getting rid of those. They put the bikers out. They got the flyers. They're going to...
Biker chaplain's coming.
Biker chaplain. Getting rid of all those old models. They're legending that crap, but they're like, they haven't given Chaos and a two wound model yet that's gonna be, you know, maybe they will, maybe they won't, but like the thing is it's like Space Marine players and people make the argument all the time, that's what Games Workshop sells. Games Workshop sells a lot of Space Marine stuff because they don't make anything as cool or as new all the time for all the other factions.
I think it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is.
Because, you know, obviously Space Marines are going to be the big thing that they push out. Those are the poster boys because they're the good guys. You know, they're the easiest to market.
Yeah, they're the good guys.
You're not going to make it. Shut up, Mike.
Come on. I have a couple books I could point you to in the lore.
Well, and then I could point you to worst case scenarios other places.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyhow, you know, you're not going to put Lucius the Eternal as your poster boy for 40K if you're trying to get, you know, 13-year-old kids who have their moms driving them around or walking them around the mall to get invested in your game. You're going to put the big, clean, happy Space Marine that, you know, looks friendly. Well, sort of friendly.
Well, he looks very much in line with what we think of as an action movie hero.
Yeah.
Bigger, larger than life, practically a superhero.
You want to bring people in with a friendly, a positive aesthetic model. You bring them in,
like
people
the greater
start
good.
Playing that, and therefore they start, that's the faction that sells the most. So to keep driving their economic engine, they're going to keep putting out releases for what they know sells most.
I think what the natural progression is, bring in somebody, play as Space Marines for a while, eventually fall to Chaos once they start to play for long enough. Now, one thing is I'm excited for my Iron Warriors because their chapter tactic...
Iron Warriors are
a bonus against
a subtle winner currently.
Building. So, because they are the siege specialists, so are Iron Warriors going to be top of the meta in 9th?
Doubtful.
Hey, time will tell.
No. Don't crush Mike's dreams.
My opinion is that any Legion and for the most part any army has a winning build out there. Now, are you going to win LVO with it? No. Could you win a GT with it if you're a good player and you really think about it and play test it? Hell yeah, you can. Hopefully also some of your opponents suck. That usually helps you a lot. And as I've always said, the game is very easy if you just roll sixes. So life pro tip there, go for that.
Roll better.
Preheat
You heard it here.
Just roll better.
Yeah, just get good, bro. But yeah, so I mean that's kind of terrain and hopefully where we see it going. I think the other big thing, at least in GW news, is on the Indominus pre-orders, which went live yesterday.
Ooh.
And ooh, buddy, you want to talk about a salt mine. So I'm just going
to point out, I don't have a reason to be salty because I managed to...
I mean, I got the Necrons half of my Indominus box.
I play neither of those armies, so I don't care.
That's honestly, you just touched on something that I did want to mention is part of me doesn't understand why people are freaking out about the box selling out so quickly. Because if you are not playing either of those armies, and even if you are playing either of those armies, the only thing that's actually exclusive to that box is an alternate cover of a book that's coming out the same day the box is coming out.
Well, we don't know that, though.
No, I do know that.
We know that Outriders are for sure going to get their own box here.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. So my point was that I was told specifically
that the only thing exclusive in that box is the alternate cover on the rule book.
Oh.
Everything else is coming out. We don't think, if you look at the upcoming releases, right? We know we've got new paints coming out.
Mm-hmm.
We know we've got the box coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The actual ninth edition, because Indominus is apparently.
No, I'm saying the ninth edition, they're just counting Indominus. We know that there is a Nebulous actual starter box in the future.
The thought process is that Indominus is a special edition. Obviously a ninth edition starter box as well, but then there will be a ninth edition starter box that
it will be more like Dark Imperium or always be.
Yeah,
probably
has less shit in it, but it's also probably going to be, you know, 25-50 bucks cheaper.
Yeah, I imagine it's going to look somewhere smaller than Dark Imperium, but bigger than whatever that middle grade one was.
Well, I'm sitting in my crystal ball. It's going to be Space Marines versus something.
Space Marines.
My personal, not to get too sidetracked about what we know is coming, but in my brain, what I really hope it is, and not because this would interest me, but this would drive so many people and that are interested in certain factions to buy this box.
Mechanicus versus Dark Mechanicus.
No, that would... it was actually going to be, in my brain, it would be Imperial Guard versus Fallen Guard versus Traitor Guard.
Please, God, give me a fucking Traitor Guard army.
So
it's all I want.
Think about this.
It's
think
one
about
of the
this.
Two things
if,
I want.
If the Dark Imperium equivalent is a box that is easily converted into one army,
yeah,
you're going to sell a ton of those because people won't be splitting it between two people like we're doing with Indominus. They'll be like, I want this box because this is a huge army in a box for just me.
Yeah.
But anyhow, back to what we know is coming.
Yeah. So my point there, George, and so obviously, you know, looks like we're going to get all this stuff broken out in individual boxes. I think a lot of people were a little salty about Indominus, you know, background sold out in like 5 seconds. Like it was a very quick sellout.
Literally probably, 10 minutes.
I think that
at least in the U.S.
Right. All the copies for the U.S. that have been allocated to us and allocated to friendly local game stores, to Warhammer stores, Games Workshop stores, blah, 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 all sold out in 10 minutes, which is, you know, fantastic for GW. I wish I owned their stock. But, like, I think a lot of people were unhappy about the numbers that have been produced so far because of the language,
I'm assuming, is what you... The way they were saying that there would be enough.
Yeah, that probably wasn't great expectation management, but what I'm more talking about is fear of missing out. And with what we've seen in the last few box sets, specifically Shadowspere, is that we're still waiting around for literally all of the Chaos units in Shadowspere to get its own broken out box. You can get Greater Possessed, Obliterators, and Venom Crawlers, and the Master of Possession. The only way you can get those is the Shadowspere box or a Start Collecting box.
Right.
And I mean, honestly, like if they sold like 2 Oblitz or God forbid 3 Oblitz with a new sculpt in there as a single like $75 box, I'd probably have 4 or 5 of them sitting at home because I love Oblitz.
See, but you just touched on something why I don't think we see that is because they want to drive the people that want that. That's the chase model in the new start collecting.
Yeah,
and it's not a great feeling for somebody that already has a large collection.
Save the fucking plastic. I don't want 10 bolter bitches, you know?
Yeah, no, especially because they're useless.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll get better. You know, they're nice as Red Corsairs, which we'll touch on later. But
I really want to say what we're going to talk about with the Red Corsairs, but I want to hold it. I'm going to hold it in.
It's a surprise.
Anyhow, so I think, you know, it's big news. Indominus sold out. I think is kind of a mollifying statement. I talked about this pre-show. One thing we have to consider and always keep this in mind is that GW is a business, and that does not inherently make them evil, unlike how a lot of comment sections want you to believe. GW is a business. It's publicly traded, and we have to remember and think about that when things like a sellout happens. GW doesn't produce to meet all the demand there is. And they do that because if their demand projections are wrong, they sit on hundreds of thousands of dollars of inventory that they have to warehouse. And as a guy that worked in logistics and warehousing for the Navy for a couple of years, that shit gets expensive.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So yeah, it sucks if you didn't get your box, but hey, I mean, GW's a business. It is what it is.
Or George, drive down to St. Augustine because...
Well, so it's a... Each of the GW stores has an allotment beyond their pre-orders. So, you know, St. Augustine, where we're at, he, you know, has said that he will have more copies beyond... He doesn't know how long they're going to last. So if you are one of those people who desperately wants a Dominus box... Maybe because you play one of those factions, maybe you really want to get into the new Necron, go to your GW on the day of opening. Hell, go make sure you're there when they open to maximize your chances of getting it. But
Camp out.
No,
3 days in advance.
Don't do that.
Don't shower.
Don't do that.
Praise Nerva.
Definitely. You'll,
So basically, you're a stereotypical Warhammer player. Just go stand outside a building for 3 days?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
No, that's other systems magic. Wait, what?
What?
Who said that?
Keyforge superiority.
Oh, Keyforge is great. Anyhow, sir.
Keyforge.
Keyforge, play it. All right, cool. So, anyhow, so that's kind of our news on GW, I think.
Well, the biggest news, though, is, George, how long is it going to take you to paint the Indominus box?
Depends on... How little sleep I get, because I'm going to be going back to work right after it drops.
You heard it here first, folks. Summer 2022, George will have Indominus painted halfway.
I would say you're being very optimistic.
Hey, so speaking of painting, hobby progress, guys. Mike,
yo,
what's your hobby progress, bro?
I've been 3D printing like a madman.
Oh, shit. That's leading, more the printer's, you know, progress than yours.
Just been printing a lot of... printing a lot of terrain lately, especially for other systems. I've been printing a lot of Frostgrave terrain. I recently took a commission for a friend of mine that is buying up the rest of my Space Marines, and good. They're going to be my most hated nemesis of all time, the Imperial Fists. So I've been working on those to get them out of my house.
Castles suck. Hashtag Dorne sucks.
Hashtag
unfortify this position.
Hashtag... siege. Repeat ad nauseum. Other than that, I don't really... I'm looking around my room, and I don't see much more than that. I've just been kind of working on terrain this week, and you know, those Imperial Fists. I still stare at the Zombie Lord, or I'm sorry, the Vampire Lord on Zombie Dragon. It's a mouthful. He's still primed.
Yep.
And you know, just getting there, trying my best to keep up. With everything that I need to do.
Sweet. George? Okay, good section, George. Thanks.
Hey now. No, so right now where I'm at actually is I'm completely in build and prime mode because I'm trying to clear as much space for when all the Warcaster stuff arrives.
Oh, yeah. So that you cannot paint that either, right?
No, that's going to get painted because I'm passionate about that right now.
Paint your shit, George.
But specifically, I am working on... I've built several of the AdMech heroes. I'm building the Dune Crawler, and I'm still oscillating on picking some build out choices for the other things in my AdMech army, specifically the troops. But otherwise, been building and cleaning up some of the Relic Blade models. Basically, just kind of waiting on a good day to prime because it's been really, really rainy here the past few days.
Yeah, you gotta like find that time.
Because otherwise the alternative option is unsafe inside practices, and I'm not doing that because I don't feel like dying from inhalation.
Dude, my wife already gets mad at me like if I don't leave something outside for like 15 minutes after I prime it because the house gets stunk up, like, you know, primer. I can't smell it.
Oh yeah, my wife is always like, well, did you prime something?
No.
and actually the biggest thing right now, I'm kind of debating on what to do because I literally was going to start priming my AdMech last night, except... there's this still rumored Runelord Brass spray that I've gotten even stronger indications is going to be a real thing. May actually already have been made, and they just haven't announced it yet. And I have this thing where do I wait to prime for that product to come out because I did want the brass underpinnings for all my metallics, or do I just go with Lead Belcher and go with a slightly more standard metallic metal
you could always take Mike's advice and prime it black first, and then whenever Rune Lord comes out, prime it. Rune Lord.
Lit. Yeah. I'm not double priming.
just you know, make sure that you do it black.
So is that to say your hobby progress?
I think that covers my hobby progress.
So you put together some models and you debated on priming?
More like I was about to prime and then I realized that I don't want to have to prime them twice.
Do you buy that, Zach, or do you think he just doesn't want to paint?
I think it's lies.
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 Lies and slander.
Slander. Cool. Yeah. Well, awesome. All right, cool. So, I think, I don't know if we covered this on our last episode. No, we didn't, because I just picked up the Flesh Eater Court Army. But obviously, I do have 2,500 points of Flesh Eaters that I'm working on.
Oh, it's 2,500 points.
Yeah.
Is that how much it came out to?
I think so.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Because I have like 90 fucking ghouls. Wow. In that army. I think 94 ghouls. Somehow there's 4 extra ghouls.
Well, you know what? Like,
whatever. I'll probably lose 4 over the course of the army's life. So.
Or you could just, you know, throw those into another system.
Probably. Yeah, but so I've really come to grips with the fact that I am well out of my depth for fully assembling an army, kind of in a quick time. But I have been kind of working on it. I tend to try to put about an hour a night into hobby progress, you know, when my wife and I are just like streaming shows or whatever. Since we last recorded and posted, I have built 20 ghouls. I've built 3 terrorgeists, 9 cryptors, and 9 crypt flayers.
Jesus.
I've actually done pretty goddamn good, to be honest. I've primed all of that.
What color did you prime it?
I did not prime it black.
Whatever, man. Your funeral.
Our models look like fucking garbage. So, no, I actually used Gray Sear, the gray contrast paint from Games Workshop. So, that does very quickly run out, by the way. Maybe I'm over priming, but yeah, so I primed all of that, and then I've painted 6 of the flayers. I want to say 10 of the ghouls. And I think it looks really good, man. I got to tell you, this army's really sold me on contrast. I was already sold on it. But, it is making my life so easy.
Yeah, especially the wings. Like, whenever wife painted up her... Which ones are the like hulking ground guys that have the wings?
Crypt flayers.
When she painted up her flayers, just how quickly they came together because she was using
hers
contrast.
Looked really good too. You showed us those.
Yeah. She's. I'm a little jealous. Like I keep trying to get her to paint stuff for me. I'm like, you sure you want to? You don't want to paint this hero?
I mean, yeah, I've seen a lot of guys online that are doing. They're doing their armor, lead belcher base, and then using a colored. Contrast over it, and it is looking fantastic.
Let me interrupt.
That's what I did with my shields for my Palinites. I did the lead belcher and then the contrast black. Right. So it's a very subtle metallic shift.
Let me interject, though. If you're going to do that, especially on Forge World or other resin models, get ready because it fucking sucks. Like my Possessed, I used Galvor back from Forge World. I've got 20 of them, and it probably took me 2 months to paint them just because of how painful it was. Because of what I did with them. So I primed them lead belcher, which partially my fault because I didn't know to wash resin when I did this.
I was about to mention that. Wash it.
The priming was a little bit difficult, not too bad. But after that, the first 5 models that I painted, I had a really hard time getting, I think it was Leviathan Blue, one of the contrasts to stick. And it works really great on the lead belcher once it does, you know, actually apply. But it would bead up a lot, if that makes sense. Right. It wouldn't like spread. I found that a good thing to do is put a light coat of matte varnish over the lead belcher, and that really helps it stick. So if you're gonna do it, it does alter the color a little bit. It's not quite as shiny as you'd like the color to be, but it still does achieve that effect. But yeah, I mean, just pro tip: wash and varnish prior to painting, if that's what you're going to do. Lead belcher with contrast on top.
Also, probably would have helped if you'd have primed it black before you did that.
Obviously. Yeah, no, it actually probably would have, though, because then the lead belcher would have stuck. But
yeah,
you're a jerk.
just saying.
Yeah, but I'm using Dark Oath Flesh with a dry brush of a lighter flesh over the top of the skin, and then my new favorite Citadel product, which is Flesh Terror's Red on the wings. And that is a... gorgeous color when that drives. It is very deep. And the way that the contrast pools, you know, if you use it correctly, just looks fantastic. And then a slight dry brush of some Jacaro orange, or however that's pronounced, over it really kind of brings out all the details. And I'm really excited by the way that the models look.
That's actually
going to look lit.
That's actually kind of how I'm doing these fists too, is I'm basing them in Everland Sunset, and then I actually like dry brush them with Dorn Yellow, which is a very bright yellow. But to bring that down just a little bit, because that contrast is so high, the Ivenden Yellow, which I'm holding in my hand, really breaks it apart and gives it that nice kind of even color where you can tell that it's kind of highlighted in the right spots, and it fills in the recesses real well. But contrast is, I think, when a lot of it came out, a lot of people were very apprehensive about it, because they're like, I don't know how that's going to do. I don't think it's the future of painting. And what's cool is now in the past year or so, how long? Maybe a year.
It came out last summer. So about a year.
About a year. People are finding some really cool stuff to do with it.
Well, it's the thing to remember with it is it doesn't replace basic painting techniques.
Right.
It doesn't replace the tools that skilled artists already have when it comes to putting paints on models. What it does is give those guys new toolkits, and it gives the new modeler, the new painter who maybe isn't confident, some easier tools to work with as they're learning how to do this.
Right.
You know, you're still, you could, if you're in a hurry, just paint with contrast, put it on the table, and it'll look fine. It'll look battle ready. However, once you learn it, start tossing in some dry brushing, some highlights, it'll just make it pop even more.
Yeah.
And there are some things that contrast just should not be doing. Don't be painting your, you know, paint your 40K vehicles with big, broad, flat surfaces with contrast, because that's not what it's designed to do.
Do not do that.
Now, if you're a Tyranid player and you've got all those funky textures on the organic hides, and just like with your zombies and your Flesh Eater Court, that's what contrast should be used
for. Contrast really works, for like highly detailed models, like especially like flesh and musculature,
I found.
And so it's perfect for Flesh Eater Courts. Will I ever use it on my Night Lords? I don't think so.
No, I don't even use it on my Death stuff. Like, what? I know they had Shaiish Purple and a few other shades.
Shaiish Purple is really nice.
It's nice.
Did my purple for my Skaven army, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think all the colors and contrast are beautiful.
Looking at my Nighthaunt Soulblight army, I didn't do that. I based it in a blue and dry brushed a bunch of different ethereal colors to get my ethereal effect. I'm cool if you want to use contrast, that's fine. And technically, I really should have for the chain rasps, but I did a dry brush that I'm a lot happier with. So it's really about personal preference for some things.
Yeah.
Because my Thousand Suns, I have some rubrics that I've been testing the Talisar blue over Lead Belcher for some of the armor. It's coming out real well. Mm-hmm. So like things that I thought I was going to use it for, I didn't really need to. And other things that I would have never thought to use it for, I actually did really enjoy. So.
You know, I think that, and I think Thousand Suns are kind of a one-off when it comes to Marines and contrast, because usually, you know, that I think the accepted painting doctrine right now with power armor is that contrast no good, don't do that. Just because a lot of power armor is very...
Yeah, whatever.
It's large, flat surfaces.
I distinctly remember when they first had, this was before they were for sale, before they went pre-order, they had here's a bunch of sample colors at the GW store. I went up to the one in Jacksonville, and they had these little pre-made Stormcast and pre-made Space Marines. And I tried one of the blues on a Space Marine, and I still have that model. In fact, I'm going to test primers on that model so that I don't use a model that I've actually done anything with. And it just looks like trash because it doesn't have the right textures to get that shadowing effect that contrast is supposed to do.
Yeah, and I, you know, and my point there with the Thousand Suns is that if you really look at their base models, even, you know, I mean, the Zangors have a lot of flesh on them, so they're good for that. The rubrics, just your basic troop choice there that's not a cultist has a lot of detail and a lot of recessed areas that would be shaded.
Yeah.
So I think that they're kind of an outlier, and Death Guard probably too.
Yeah, I feel like you could probably get away with painting Death Guard for the most part with contrast.
Yeah.
Actually, I have seen some really cool Death Guard stuff come out with some of the colors. The Plague Bearer looks good on some of the models. Death Guard's not really my faction, but yeah, I have seen some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. So, all right, guys. So I think that kind of wraps up Hobby Progress. This isn't on the schedule, but I want to take a brief moment, seeing as this is probably going to be our last podcast that has anything to do with 8th edition 40K, aside from, you know, rose-colored glasses looking back when, and just kind of do a farewell to 8th. I think if we could kind of just give a roundup of it. I mean, I came back to the game in 7th edition right before 8th dropped, and I know that I've super enjoyed 8th because having had played a couple of games in 7th, I was about to step out the door just because it was overcomplicated, in my opinion. And then 8th came in and really streamlined a bunch of stuff and also did have that granularity, you know, if you wanted it. So I think 8th has really been a very successful edition. I'm happy to see Games Workshop engaging with its clientele a little bit more. I know some people think that that's just, oh, corporate stuff. And yeah, I mean, it is. They are business, like I said. Get over it. But, you know, I think that we should be happy that we have a company that is, you know, actually putting out rules updates as opposed to, you know, Dark Eldar going 12 years in between Codex releases. So let's be thankful for what we have. And once again, I think 8th was great. You know, I'm looking forward to 9th.
Well, so maybe what was your favorite thing about 8th and what was your least favorite thing about 8th? So 8th, for me, I never played Warhammer before 8th. So 8th was my first. I played Sigmar before I played 8th. I wanted to get into Warhammer, so 8th is my first edition. So the only things that I've really seen are other people hearkening back to the days of 3rd and 4th. And they kind of said that what's happening with 9th is kind of like what's happening with, I believe, 3rd and 4th edition, where they kind of expanded on 4th, expanded on 3rd, mm-hmm. and then 5th was a brand new one. And they're kind of doing the same with 8th and 9th, I guess. They're expanding on 8th, kind of.
Yeah, refining.
Refining it. So, I mean, for you, like, what was your favorite part of 8th edition, and what was your least favorite part of 8th edition?
Obviously, we're going to have some edits here. I think my favorite part, kind of like I said earlier, was just kind of the streamlining of rules. You know, up until a certain point, I felt like 8th did a great job of avoiding rules bloat. And this isn't necessarily my least favorite thing. In fact, part of it I kind of enjoy. But I feel near the end, 8th has gotten to a point where there is a lot of rules bloat. It's just very hard to keep up with. And this will be my least favorite thing. It's hard to keep track of all the different FAQs, erratas, and then just the core rules mm-hmm. that you have to keep track of. And I don't really see this going away too much in 9th edition. Because, I mean, for example, like when I play a possessed bomb list, I think I have to carry 6 books on me.
Yeah.
I have an army list that carries 7 books with me. So, and that's a little bit much. And I know that obviously, you know, I could, you know, buy an iPad and get all the EPUBs, but I also like owning the books just to have them on my shelf.
No, they look cool on the
shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think those are my favorite things and least favorite.
Cool. What about you, George?
So, I've always, up to this point, up to 8th edition, I always was looking from the outside in at 40K. It just, the lore was kind of interesting. I played some of the video games. I dabbled with the IP, but I never took the jump into the actual game, in part because the rules seemed pretty dense.
Right.
I kept bouncing off of them. And not that I didn't play other rule-dense games, but just for some reason, 40K pre-8th edition, I was never enticed in. And 8th managed to do that, which is, you know, saying a lot, because for a while I'd actually sworn off Games Workshop games entirely in the early 2000s. I just said, nope, they're too backwards thinking. I want to play something that's trying new things out. And when I came into 8th, that's what I found, is they were trying new things. It wasn't quite what I wanted, and I still have things I'd rather them do. But that was kind of a big thing that drew me in. And the fact that the rules, my favorite thing is the quirky, weird rules interactions that are with the keyword system. I personally like that. I used to play Magic a good bit, and that was always fun, was to find those cool, quirky rules interactions.
Boo.
But my least favorite thing is probably, I feel like they didn't push it far enough. And that's kind of what I was just saying, as far as like innovative design.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some glimpses of it in stuff like Apocalypse, the same thing that I said I was wishing that would be a ninth, like alternating activations.
Yeah.
Things that just keep you more actively engaged in the game. And there's... That's still... That's not unique to 8th edition. That's more of a 40K thing. So
yeah,
if I had to pick something specifically for 40K that I disliked, my least favorite thing was as a player coming in the middle of an edition, because by the time I was coming out, all the codexes were out. I started buying models literally right as Space Marine 2 codex came out.
Oh, wow. That's recent, yeah.
Yeah, I was an Age of Sigmar guy before that. Yeah. Was just that, like, there was no easy on-ramp unless you wanted to play Space Marines, and you could buy the Dark Imperium or one of those.
Yep.
But, like, for the longest time, just staring at detachments and trying to find where in what book it explained exactly how detachments worked was mind-blowingly difficult. I picked up Kill Team first instead, and a guy was playing Kill Team. It's like, oh, they're not that difficult. He explained, I'm like, you're right, they're not difficult at all. Why didn't they have that, like, as a free download on their website or something that just made that clear? Which, lo and behold, for 9th edition... They have that.
Well, I think they had it for 8th edition too.
They didn't have the download for it. It was because I literally he had to open up the big core rule book and find it for me, which I didn't have I wasn't sure if I wanted to spend that money.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is why I think that with 9th, the core rule download that they have for 9th that has all those things is a very good choice.
Well, actually, it's funny. We missed something in the salt mine, but that app that they mentioned, the 9th edition app, kind of like, the Sigmar one.
Yeah.
It's like $5 a month or something like that. Ooh, talk about some salty characters on the internet for that one. Just not to backtrack, but I just forgot about that.
The same guys that use BCP and Battlescribe but don't pay the subscriber fee to them to support people, but then bitch about how they're not like constantly up to date.
And this is coming from people I donate to Battlescribe.
Yeah.
I don't, but I also don't complain that they don't, if they don't have something that
fair enough.
Yeah. So I'm kind of but I will probably subscribe to the 40K one simply because, and this is part of the reason why I think something that people need to keep in mind when they look at this new subscription model, I don't have a ton of the books because I came in so late. The subscription says all the 8th edition codexes, if you're subscribing, you will have access to those rules.
Yeah, so I mean, let's do some quick math. $60 a year. If you're a Space Marine player, you're paying $35 a year for a codex because that's about the frequency they get one. And then Psychic
I thought it was 35 every six months now.
And then Vigilus. And then probably your supplement on top of that. So like the campaign books, especially. I mean, we're well into $120.
So wait, this app gives you access to all of the 8th edition.
That's what they're saying.
Even the Psychic Awakening and everything?
I believe so.
So what the fuck is everybody so upset about? That's awesome.
Because they're having to pay for something.
Oh, that's
funny. That they have been conditioned because of Battlescribe being a voluntary pay model. Gamers have been conditioned to expect it for free.
Yeah,
you are literally, but you're talking about a hobbyist that pays $100 for a box of 15 models, and you're complaining about a $60 a year expense.
And if you already, and I also accept that from different viewpoints, some people are gonna look at that $5 and say, "I've already bought the books. I don't need the app."
Fine,
but from my great, don't pay for it. But from my perspective, I need those books. I just started playing AdMech. I have not gotten all the books. I did not buy Engine War yet. And I'm probably, honestly, not going to buy them now because I don't have room on my shelf, and I'd rather just wait for the 9th Ed Codex.
You know what? And I'll tell you what, George, kind of like talking off what you said, I don't know that I'm going to get the app. I probably will. But even if I do, like, I'm still going to buy the codexes because just the way that my brain works, I like to sit down and read through the book
and think. The fact that when you buy the codex now, you're going to get a code. You get a
digital download, yeah.
Yeah, and that digital download is independent of if you're paying the subscription or using the free version of the app.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's included.
there's going to be a black market for that shit.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? Cool.
Yeah, that's a whole separate issue.
So
GW is doing what they, in my opinion, GW is handling this correctly. Now, I will have an issue if they are charging this and they're not timely in updating. Because now that we're having money changing hands for this, I will, and if I'm paying my subscription, I will complain if they are
customer. Hold on 1 second. I have the Azure app open. Let's see if they do the new points increases.
Actually, we can check, and I believe they were supposed to.
Let's see what they said.
I think that while you guys are looking that up, I think it's safe to say that GW has a golden opportunity to do this 100% correct and do a great job of it. And then I think if they just do it even 70% correct, people are going to hate it. But I mean, they could also just bomb and just really earn some malice and ill will towards them. Now, how will that manifest to their bottom line? I don't think it will, because this fan base is a little bit ravenous. And I say that as part of that ravenous horde.
All we have to do is keep buying GW shit. I have my complaints, but I keep voting with my wallet. All we have to do as an example of that is look at how quickly that box sold.
Yeah.
I mean,
people have been complaining about it already for 2 months. The damn thing's not out, but Indominus is sold out. So, yeah. Dead space. Dead air.
Like Dead Space?
Dead Space, the game.
Well, I guess moving on to me, I don't have anything really to say about it because it was my first real foray in the 40K. So, you know, I wish that I had kind of maybe gone to... I ended up starting with Kill Team, and I bought a Death Watch Star Collecting box because I was reading Eisenhorn, which is basically, if you're looking to read the Black Library, a lot of people will say, go read Eisenhorn.
Because it's awesome.
Because it's great. But I was like, oh, he orders Xenos, Inquisitor, Eisenhorn, awesome, Death Watch. And I wish that, I guess... You know, it's hard to kind of, for a new player coming into any edition, or just a new player in general, I wish they kind of had a better way of telling you whether or not, like a rating for like maybe tournaments or something like that, or if there was like a resource involved where it's like Reavers, they're terrible. Nobody likes Reavers. The only people who can, or the players that can make Reavers kind of work are White Scars players. Maybe some sort of compendium that says, like, don't use Reavers in a
competitive GW sense. Is never going to put that out.
Mike, no, absolutely not.
That would hurt their sales. I think your best bet on that shit is just Reddit, man.
Yeah, that's really all it is, and I hate going to Reddit because it's just the wet turd of the internet.
I don't know, man. The Warhammer competitive sub's actually pretty okay.
Yeah, that one's all right. But, I mean the rest of Reddit...
It's not like a fucking disaster like some of the other subs that I'm unfortunately a member of. Yeah, you know, I actually want to do a brief retraction, and I think we can kind of close on this unless you guys want to, you know, kick my idea in the ass. But not the streamlining isn't my favorite part of 8th. In fact, 8th isn't my favorite part of 8th. What I like the most about the last 3.5 or so years has been, like, the age of 8th edition. We saw, and I touched on this briefly, we saw Games Workshop re-engage with their clientele and put out a metric shitload of new releases. Not even looking at 40K, which had, you know, Psychic Awakening and multiple Vigilus Ablaze books and multiple codexes, you know, one for each faction, and then some of us got a couple of codexes. You know, I want to talk more about things like, you know, Kill Team came out, Adeptus Mechanicus, fucking Necromunda came back.
Yes.
Like, what a throwback. What a great game.
That's cool.
Speaking of which, I really need to build my arm. I mean, my faction, my little cult thing.
I'm just going to point out, I have a painted and based faction. You'll make fun of me for not having my stuff. I have mine done.
I have 10,000 points of painted 40K. Shut up.
Warhammer Quest. Blackstone Fortress.
Blackstone Fortress. The models are amazing. But did I say Aeronautica, Titanicus, Necromunda?
They have.
Kill Team. The first Kill Team thing that
Apocalypse,
they did,
which by Apoc, this point is its own game.
Yeah, which is a pretty solid system, actually. I haven't played it a lot, but it is fucking fun. So, I mean, you look at all that support and then just the glut of releases. Yeah, most of them are Primaris, but hey, at least we're getting new shit, you know?
They finally updated some Eldari models.
Yep.
They finally...
you with the Eldari. You keep talking about these.
Oh, I'm just pointing out, they got new models, like... Not a ton of stuff, but it's a little bit.
That new Drazar model is really fucking cool.
So maybe it was mission accomplished for them because they released so many products that I had no choice but to be drawn into a Games Workshop space because I was like, Necromunda, holy shit, that's awesome. Kill Team, holy shit, that's awesome. 40K, holy shit, that's awesome. Adeptus Mechanicus, but still... Really cool, easy avenues where everything...
You mean Adeptus Titanicus?
Yeah. What did I say?
You said Mechanicus.
You said Mechanicus too.
Fuck you, no, I didn't.
Yeah, actually you did the first time.
You guys are fired.
Suck it. Titanicus.
Yeah.
Which, Titanicus, if you're going to do Titanicus, just make them the same size. Because every other game, which is what I was going to say, all of those models are compatible in 40K and every other system. But Titanicus, because they made the knights a little smaller.
Well, and they're actually
a lot smaller, dude. And it's like the size of Aeronautica, fucking Terminator.
Fucking joke, man.
Well, but they did actually make them the same scale as the Aeronauticus Imperialis game. The planes and the knights for Titanicus are the same scale.
Oh, cool. So can my knight from Titanicus punch a Aeronautica?
That's been a rumored, like, eventual where they're going with that.
What I would love to see, I'd love to see Epic come back and tie those two systems back in together.
All they need is land units, and they've got it. Yep,
they've got it. And then a cohesive rule set, which it seems like I haven't played Aeronautica and I haven't played Titanicus, but from what I understand, they have relatively tight rule sets. So hopefully they can blend that. I'd also love to see fucking Battlefleet Gothic.
If you want to talk the closest before I finally started playing Kill Team I had ever been to actually playing a 40K IP tabletop game was mid-90s, Battlefleet Gothic had just launched, and I'm at a game store in Baton Rouge, and these older kids came in, and they've got their fleets, and they're laying it out, and the orcs are blowing the shit out of the Space Marines. I'm like, I want that. Dude, Mike. And then I realized that I was a kid.
What?
Sorry, no. Edit. Sorry. I was going to ask, can you print me some Battlefleet Gothic shits?
Dude, we have like a copy of Forbidden Stars, which is basically Battlefleet Gothic in its own board game.
I'm sorry, George, I cut you off.
But I mean, I already called the Chaos Army, or Chaos Fleet, so you can either be Ultramarines or the Eldar or Orcs.
Oh, you're talking that?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I thought you were talking about Battlefleet. I'm like, no, dude, I'm playing fucking Chaos. Like, get out.
Well, that's the cool thing about Chaos, though, is like I can also play Chaos and fight you, and it makes sense from a lore perspective. But not for Space Marines, because they're all a bunch of pansies.
They still fight each other. Right. Yeah, the Ultra Marines just think those Imperial Fists over there are heretics and vice versa.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks cool, man. God, I see that stuff on eBay for like $200 for like five ships. It's like, a little prohibitive.
So. I just feel like... But it's
also, they're 25-year-old models, too.
I feel like it's inevitable that we're going to get a new slightly rescaled, so you can't use the old Battlefleet Gothic. I feel like that's probably a specialty game for next year.
Yeah, and you know, and they'll do a rules rewrite on it too, because you know, I haven't played the old Battlefleet, but from what I understand, it's like it's kind of a wonky ass rule system, and it's a little like, it doesn't hold up well. Like it worked great in the 90s, but now it's kind of like with 8th edition and everything that we've seen and been through, especially with other games really innovating, it wouldn't stand up too well.
No, especially now. I mean, maybe back then it was the only space flight, space armada game, but now they have, I mean, Star Wars Armada, X-Wings out.
What's the Drop Fleet game?
Drop Fleet Commander and Drop Zone Commander. Yeah, I don't know how those interface, but...
Well, I just think they're two representations of the same IP.
I think one's on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. I think Drop Fleet is the aerial one. And then they also, since then, for just naval-type games, they've had stuff like...
Well, Titanicus is a naval game, technically. I mean, well, naval in how the game mechanics work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not. It's obviously not naval combat.
But yeah, there's been an increase in those in the variety of those sorts of games, and it's sort of like what we saw in the 2000s, where you know stuff like Weird started coming out with Malifaux, and Privateer Price came out with War Machine, and it forced GW to update. And that's probably something we can expect in the future. Quick update as far as the future of the app. I just checked. The Skaven stuff has not been updated in the app yet.
So, Gears of War Games Workshop.
Meh.
Yeah, cool. So, that kind of wraps up, you know, Farewell to 8th. Again, overall, I think it was a great addition / age or epoch, if you want to get even nerdier on time frames. But, yeah, looking forward to 9th. And, okay, guys, let's roll into our games played. So I think outside of what we covered last week, I've only had one game, and that was yesterday's 3,000-point game, probably my last 8th, World Eaters versus and a Chaos Knight. I should say World Eaters and a Chaos Knight versus Space Wolves against a buddy of mine named Dennis. Game went okay. I thought I was in control pretty much the whole game, but I actually ended up losing... It's really hard when you got woofing in your face and Terminators and everything's got a 3-up invul to just do enough a mass amount of shots to get through all that. But, you know, it was still a fun game. Killed a lot of Imperial dogs, literally, because they're space corgis. But, yeah, it was a good game and decent closeout to 8th. Kind of hoping I would win my last game in 8th, but didn't happen.
I really want to see space corgis. I want someone to mod the Wolfen to be space corgis. Make that happen, somebody.
Actually, what would be cool is if they took, I'm not saying space wolves, but some sort of Northern Viking aesthetic and put it into Sigmar. Games Workshop is leaving a lot of money on the table because if I had crazy wild Norsemen, I would totally play that army.
Honestly, that
was a thing in Fantasy Battles.
Yeah, I know, Kislev. But not in Sigmar. So
was it a Kislev in Fantasy Battles?
Maybe.
I don't know, Kislev were literally called like Norse or something like that.
Yeah, well,
they were all Chaos Worship.
Yeah, because the North, you know, in the world that was, it was all just, hey, here's the world, and just, you know, United States is elves. England is high elves. The north, the Slavic areas, that's all chaos. Germany is, you know, the empire. So,
give me some fucking Nords that worship chaos, and I am sold.
You know they're going to be getting some skulls for the skull god.
I will be buying the whole line.
You got to make sure you speak with like a Swedish accent with all of them. I don't know if that's a good Swedish accent.
I don't know. I'm a Cajun, so my sense of accents are all off.
Every time Bjorn came up yesterday, Bjorn the Fell-Handed, I just yelled, Bjorn, and had a great time doing that.
Does he listen to Amon Amarth unironically?
I do.
Well, I mean, that's...
You know what? Fuck you, Mike. Amon Amarth's awesome. I don't care what anyone says.
I mean, I like Amon Amarth. I'm just saying that it is a requirement to play Space Wolves that you listen to Amon Amarth.
I don't know. I'll ping Dennis right after this and see.
We'll get back to that. That's my homework. We'll get to that on the next episode. We will confirm or deny if the Space... I know one Space Marines player that plays Space Wolves listens to Amon Amarth, and that is our buddy Josh.
I was about to ask, are you talking about Josh?
That dude rocks some Amon Amarth, and he's got like 7,000 points of Space Wolves. So I know that dude is legit, like a serious Space Wolves player. But this other guy, I'm weary. So
we have to confirm his true son of the wolf status.
Inquiring minds must know.
All right, I just pinged him.
All right, yeah, get that answer.
So those are my games played. What about you, Mike?
I did not actually get any games in this past week. I wasn't able to get in any games. I think I was trying to set something up but never got to it. There was one guy who wanted to play, but he's still building up his army, and I don't really like to go get all my shit, put it in my car to go play a 500 point game with somebody. Like, if I'm gonna leave my house in the middle of all this and like go to a game store and meet you, it's got to be 1,500 points or above. And that made me sound snobby, but I just, dude, it takes me so long to get somewhere to do that stuff. If I'm playing in the garage, fine. But if I got to drive to you, 1,000 points or more, you know, that's it.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get any Warhammer games in or any miniatures games in, but I did get a ton of board games in the other day.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we had this wonderful little situation where a friend of mine... basically their like surrogate daughter, her boyfriend was hanging out of the house, and that was one of the conditions, was whenever she brought a boy home, he would have to play family board games. And this friend, he's married to my cousin, so I'm considered part of the family. So we went over there and we played Betrayal and Seven Wonders and Dominion, I think, was the third one.
Oh, nice. You should have been like, let me show you about Twilight Imperium, motherfucker. Just dropped that 30-pound
I didn't know what was going on. I brought a bunch of unmatched stuff because I didn't know that this was going on. They were just like, hey, come over. And then they're like, oh, yeah, this is the boyfriend. Now we got to play games against him. I'm like, ugh. But otherwise, I just brought Scythe and just kept pulling out more expansions.
I want to play Scythe.
Scythe is awesome. So good.
Yeah. I like the aesthetic.
But we did play Betrayal, which was actually really fun and really goofy. I was a creepy psychologist, which is always entertaining.
Yeah, I really want to play Betrayal. There's a show on Geek and Sundry, which I'm not sure if that's still a TV channel anymore.
No, it's still YouTube, but it got bought out. It's no longer.
Sucks. It was a good channel, but so fucking the guy that played
Will Wheaton. You talk about Will Wheaton's Tabletop.
Will Wheaton. Yeah, he had a show called Tabletop, and they played it, and it looked fucking great. And I am like dead set on playing that at some point, so let me know.
Yeah, we could play that whenever. I got it.
And actually, I just remembered, I did play a game of X-Wing.
Yeah, how did that go?
I forgot that I had played a game of X-Wing. My buddy, who he lives across the street from me, his wife is off visiting family, so he was out of, he was kind of, we went wild, and I brought over X-Wing and played X-Wing. and he played Rebels and I played Imperials, and I had a Epsilon Ace and an Epsilon Pilot, and he had Poe Dameron, and let's just say that Poe Dameron did not make it through that asteroid field, because we, you know, in true Imperial fashion, left none to survive.
Good, because in the real world, the Empire would have won.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and actually, Steam sale did have the Battlefront 2 game for like $20 right now, and they've actually made it playable. Like, because I was really pissed when I first bought it for PlayStation.
Is that the like the one that was on 360?
Yeah, it's like the Battlefield. Fuck,
so many hours into that game.
Yeah, like Starfighter Assault. Like now I can shoot things. So I kind of a lot of my time has kind of been spent playing Battlefront 2 right now.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah, in my case, whenever it comes to gaming, because of the whole limited availability of gaming and gaming spaces right now, spent a lot of time playing Assassin's Creed.
Cool.
Odyssey. Nice. I've stabbed so many Greek people with, you know, random swords.
I only played the first one. I really kind of fell away from video games like after I graduated college for whatever reason. So I will turn on my Xbox 360, which is the most recent game system that I own currently, and play through Space Marine and Modern Warfare 3 about once a year.
I love Space Marine.
That Space Marine game was so good.
A great game.
They so need good. To make another one of those. Yeah. They made a video game of Necromunda too.
Yes.
Oh, did
yes.
they? Yeah, that is coming out.
Oh, sweet.
And so they also recently made a game of the Warhammer Underworlds has a Steam game now as well.
Nice.
Which is
I've seen that, the Underworld one. Yeah. Cool, man. All right, guys, so that seems like everyone's games played.
Yeah.
Right? Yep, yeah, yep. Cool. So before we close out the show, let's talk about some cool stuff that we found. I'll kick off first. So I get all my cool stuff from Kickstarter because I'm like that. But hey, you know what? I'm fine with it because I like to see, you know, these independent creators and designers getting their shit out there into the world. And so Studio X is making a mobile miniature painting studio, and it's like a little travel case. Mike, I sent it to you, so you know we can put it up on
that,
the site.
That thing is, you know, so cool. I've been seeing it on like Kickstarter. Kicked it over to me, says, oh, you back a lot of hobby stuff, you might like this.
Yeah.
But that thing looks so if it, I was more so
looking yeah
if I, mean, I was more inclined to paint on the go, which
So the reason that it attracts me is because I tend to paint in my living room. So we'll have like the dogs up on the couch with us. We'll be watching some show or whatever, and I'll have a tray table up, you know, in a very non-ergonomic position, painting my stuff every night. And instead of having to like, you know, cart all my brushes and all my paints and the models I want to get done, like my whole like apparatus and setup out to the living room from where I keep it in one of our bedrooms, you know, it'd be great if I just had this little thing that I could reset like once a week, almost in like a clearing the mechanism kind of fashion, you know, to kind of reset myself for the week, set it up with the paints that I want to use and the models I want to paint that week, and just carry it out every night. That'd be so fantastic. And I think, you know, like I've taken models on the road with me when I've traveled for work before. This thing would be amazing for that.
Definitely. So in the right, for the right people, yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I was just pointing out that, sure. I wish I was one of those people. I'm just not.
Yeah, yeah. And so I know I found it a couple of days ago and haven't opened it up recently, actually. I did back this. I think it's like $80 to back or something like that. It has been funded. It's got over 1,000 backers. They still have 16 days on their Kickstarter campaign. Today's July the 12th. So, you know, if you're into this, July 28th is your cutoff. Definitely go check it out, though. You know, it looks like a pretty neat thing. Like, you can even carry around your miniatures in it. It's got little like magnetic trays on it, so you slap a magnet on the bottom of your minis and they're gonna stick there, and it just looks like a really great, you know, great little thing. So what you got, George?
So my thing is actually, it's not a Kickstarter for once. Cool. But it is I don't remember if I've talked about this before, but in the age of social distancing, Roll20 has become a major part of my gaming experience, playing stuff like Blades in the Dark, Legend of the Five Rings remotely with friends. And the company behind, or the Roll20 company, actually has recently released their own fully integrated online RPG called Burn Bright.
Oh, wow.
So it's, I haven't had a chance to fully dig into the rules yet, so I don't want to comment too much on the rules, but it's a sci-fi game where the apocalypse is happening currently. Like something is causing habitable space to no longer be available. And I believe that's called the burn. And if you go on their website, they have like a free version, which is what they, you can play Roll20 without a subscription. You just like, oh, let me pull down this list and activate that specific rule set, and you get a stripped down version of it. And they have that available, but they also have a art asset pack and a core rule book and some adventures and some battle maps for, but it's all designed to work with their system from the ground up. And I think that's just a really interesting concept. It goes back to something I'd said whenever we talk about RPGs in a previous episode, that I feel like if this sort of virtual tabletop integration would have existed with 4th edition D&D, 5th edition would look totally different these days. And it's just, it's interesting to see, to finally see a company doing something like that and so integrated and so connected into this online experience whenever it's really, for a lot of people, the only possible gaming experience that can happen right now.
Yeah. Cool, man. Mike, you got anything?
Yeah, man. So, there's a couple of games that I found on Kickstarter, just like you. First was the Rise of the Necromancers box. So that is a game. It's a miniatures game where you are evil and a necromancer, and they have their
why I gotta be evil? Maybe I'm like doing raising the dead for good reasons.
Misunderstood.
I'm misunderstood.
Yeah. Just misunderstood. Listening to The Cure in my graveyard. Listen, dude. Boys don't cry. All right. So the other one that I found, which was pretty cool, is it's called Mutant Chronicles Siege of the Citadel, and it's a techno-fantasy board game. Techno-fantasy. So, you know, it looks pretty neat, and it comes with a shitload of stuff. So it's got some terrains, some minis, just a bunch of different kind of... And, you know, it's a nice break from other things. And then... one last one that I found was Perfect Crime, which is a heist game, like a bank heist game, where you can you crack saves and you rob banks and you break in, and each guy's got a different skill set. It's a heist movie in a board game box.
You son of a bitch, I'm in.
You son of a bitch, I'm in. So pretty hyped about all those. Those projects will be in the link for the show notes on our website, ttdpodcast.com. So you can, if you're curious about any of those, every single one that I've mentioned has been backed already, with Techno Fantasy Mutant Chronicles having 4,000 backers. So, you know, that's pretty cool. But that's all I have for cool shit.
Sweet.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's it for this week. So, you know, thanks for tuning in. As always, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. We're on Facebook, Instagram. We have an email you can spam. All that good stuff.
We're on every podcast provider now.
And yes. If you're listening via the iTunes, the Apple podcast, make sure to leave a review. Helps with our visibility.
Yeah, please. Yeah, that'd be great.
Please, yes.
Oh, hey, probably should have mentioned this at the top of the show. Hopefully we haven't lost anyone that's listening, but we have a pretty big announcement coming up. So definitely tune in to our next episode to hear that. It's pretty exciting news. So, yeah. That's about all I've got. You guys good?
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy.